on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. Michael Patrick Francis Gunner, born the 6th of January 1976. He is, of course, the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory. Having held the seat of the suburb of Fanny Bay in Darwin since the retirement of the then Chief Minister, Claire Martin, in 2008. Michael Gunner, of course, leading Labor to a landslide victory at the 2016 Northern Territory elections. So who is this first ever born and bred Territorian to hold the seat of Chief Minister? This afternoon on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory, your My Territory Childhood guest, Michael Gunner. Hello.
G'day, how are you going?
Born to Mick and Jane Gunner in Alice Springs in 1976 at the Alice Springs Base Hospital. But your story doesn't begin there. In fact, it actually begins in the 1930s when your great-grandfather settled in Tennant Creek from the Eastern European country of Georgia. He was fleeing Georgia after the Russian Revolution. What do you know of that life in Georgia?
He was a white Russian, apparently, and he didn't talk about it much. And my memories of my great-granddad are this really tall, big man, and we'd go around to his backyard in Tennant Creek. It's the Heritage Listed Building in there now. And there were always these bowls of Crown Mints, and I always associate Crown Mints with granddad, this big man. He used to get all these publications sent over from Russia, and my granddad was very unhappy about that because it saw him blacklisted, I think, during the 40s and 50s about what way they were carrying his trucks and that. Everyone thought granddad was a Russian sympathizer. So he never talked much about it, unfortunately, but he did anglicize his name. So I knew him as Con Perry, but he was Khan Perra, and he jumped ship about 10 years before he got to Tennant Creek. And we've always wondered what he was running from, in a sense, because back then in the 30s, Tennant was a couple of hundred people, no bitumen, not even really a road. He found the first water supply. The reason why Tennant Creek is where it is because he found the water. It was originally by the creek, and he found the first permanent water source. He found the first bore, you know, mining, cattle, the lot. He was involved in it all. And he eventually worked out that the best way to make money was to sell stuff to people who are mining and trying to make money on the cattle station. So he ended up being big in retail in Tennant Creek. And back then, very big poker games, I understand. He, at different stages, owned the whole main street and lost the whole main street. So big, larger-than-life character was Con. That's my memories of him. Big in size, big in stature, big in story.
I imagine it would have been a pretty tough existence for your dad, Mick, with immigrant parents.
Dad doesn't talk about this much, but he was one of 10. They all helped, basically, they all stood up for each other. So he tells lots of stories about going to school, and all the brothers and the sisters would sort of hang together and look out for each other and protect each other's back. So he never gets into the how he was teased or what the reaction was, just that they had formed a very strong bond. Very strong bond. It didn't help, I think, their granddad came home every 2 weeks and shaved all their heads. That was the way they saved money, because we were doing it pretty tough. And so apparently granddad would just say, right, line up, and then just shave everyone into a bowl cut, like a number one or a number two. So they were at school, probably got picked upon for the migrant parents, all had the same shaved head cut haircut.
I wonder if that followed on for you as well and your siblings.
I had the bowl cut the entire life, just you know, put the bowl around you and just neat fringe. If you look at all my primary school photos, I had this like permanent fringe just below the eyebrows, a bowl cut, like the Beatles, just bang. Save money on your haircut. You don't need a proper haircut, son. Yeah.
Is it true that you have Indigenous relatives in Utopia stemming from that 1930s settlement?
So Peter Gunner, at 12 years of age in Alice Springs, so early 40s that would have been, his mum got worried about the Japanese invading Alice. Apparently there was a sighting of a plane over the top or something. So she sent my granddad to boarding school in Adelaide at 12. And he said, this isn't for me. And he walked out and he hitchhiked all the way back, at 12 years of age, all the way back to Alice Springs. On the way there, he made friends of another 12-year-old boy called Dinny, who was going out to be a jackaroo at Amaru Station. So at 12 years of age, my granddad said, that's what I want to do. And he became a full-time jackaroo at Amaru Station, spent 7 years there. He then hung around that Utopia region and he met a lovely lady, Topsy, who had a son with her, Peter. So he didn't know about young Peter. He'd moved on. And Peter Gunner was a member of the Stolen Generation, the Gunner-Kubilo High Court case. And so I've got relatives in the Utopia region through my granddad. But I grew up not knowing about our family in Utopia, and also came out during the High Court case that we've got, I had an uncle and family in Utopia.
On ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory with you this afternoon, Michael Gunner. He is your My Territory Childhood guest this afternoon. He is, of course, also the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory. Let's talk about you. You are the eldest of four children. There is your younger sister, Rebecca, Tom and Lucy. I imagine an early childhood for you that is pretty loud, lots of laughing, lots of bickering, lots of running around the house.
In Tennant Creek, it was all about making your own BMX tracks and heading off into the scrub. And same in Alice Springs, we were out Dixon Road, and across the road from us was all those classic Alice Springs hills. So in Alice and Tennant, we just spent our whole time running amok. And I've got this great memory in Alice Springs, you know, so Dixon Road, quite civilized, ordinary houses and all that. You go across the road, run amok. Dad came over one day with us and cooked a billy, you know, set a little mini fire, and we cooked some beans over the fire, sort of camping out in the middle of Alice Springs. And in Tennant Creek, is all about BMX bikes. It's, everything was BMX bikes.
And it's interesting that you've mentioned Tennant Creek, you've mentioned Alice Springs, because your family actually did move around an awful lot. What do you actually remember, particularly in Tennant Creek, grade four? Dad Mick, yes, he's got a job, but ends aren't really being met. And ultimately, the six of you, Mum Jane, Rebecca, Tom, Lucy, you and your dad, you end up couch surfing. What do you remember of that?
Dad, very lucky, large family. We were essentially crashing with our aunts and uncles while Dad was trying to find work and employment, get into public housing. So, you know, public housing was the goal in a sense. We had no house and we're doing it very tough. For me, though, the memories are very much of hanging out with my cousins. And I remember chasing my cousins out across this park to go run around, and they walked straight across this bindi patch, and back then my feet were not thick. I hurt a lot, and we're thinking, what? And then my life goal at that age was to get really thick feet to be able to walk around with no thongs on. That was the goal in Tennant Creek. That was how tough you were. Could you stand, how long could you stand on the road? We used to do that test, you know, who could stand on the road the longest, who could walk across the bindi patches. So eventually I got there. So for some ways growing up, that was great because we were living with family, but it's tough. It was tough times in hindsight, especially in hindsight. You know, but as a young kid, grade four, I enjoyed being with my cousins.
So as you say, territory housing, eventually a home was made available to your family, all six of you. What do you remember of that house?
My aunt, who had the nickname Viper, was terrified of thunderstorms. So it was actually a new housing commission house. They must have just built it. And it was based off a Darwin plan, which we didn't realise, but my aunt had done all the research. And the first time there was a thunderstorm, we get this bang, bang, bang on the door, and she's come around and went straight into our cyclone shelter in the middle, a cyclone shelter in Tennant Creek. So I remember this house and being really proud of the fact we'd got a good house. This is a solid house, you know. So it was house pride. And we had this yard that was just dirt. You know, here's the keys to a new house. And there was not one skerrick in the yard. And Dad made the effort to plant the trees and get the lawn going. And I was in charge of watering the trees. And that was my job in making this house a home.
You attended Lady of Sacred Heart Primary School in Alice Springs. What do you remember of that time? Do you have a particular teacher that was a favourite?
Our Lady of Sacred Heart was three stories high. My thoughts were more about getting vertigo going up the stairs. One of the great tragedies of jumping schools like I did is that I had friends that changed, teachers that changed. And so my favourite teachers ended up being one of my high school teachers.
This isn't a timeline, and as you say, you do jump around Tennant Creek, Alice Springs, Darwin. I'm interested to know, in those formative years, when you're six, when you're seven, when you're eight, what was the feeling like for you with Mum and Dad, given that you did move around a lot? Were you close?
We were really close as a family, and your best mates become your siblings because they're the ones who are always in your life. And as a family, we did everything together, so other people often comment about how close we are as a family, but for me, that's how you are. You hang out with your family, you do everything with your family. I'm very tight with all my cousins. I think I've got 70 odd cousins on Mum and Dad's side. Mum's one of eight, Dad one of 10. Really tight, lots of road trips, lots of adventures, all as a family. They were your mates.
And when you talk about those adventures, what comes to mind for you?
really long road trips to the point where sometimes we would skip school to do them and we get the homework from the teacher. You know, this is what Michael's got to do for the next couple of weeks while he should be at school. Tracking down the family, we did one really great long holiday from Adelaide all the way up to Cairns where my grandparents were in Cairns. My first experience of the tropics before Darwin was Cairns and the wonderful trees and the mangoes and the bats and the beaches. It was wonderful. But that was a massive long road trip. So I remember all these road trips were always in the car and we're always driving. And one of the great things I love doing now is driving the track, driving the Stuart Highway. It's always very sentimental and emotional to hit the road.
Again, talking about your primary school years, you did attend primary school in Tennant Creek, and there is a particular memory for you there.
Kargaroo Public Primary School in Tennant Creek. There was no uniform code at Kargaroo in Tennant Creek in those years, but there was a uniform, and Mum thought it was very important that I wore the uniform. So I was the only kid at Kargaroo Primary School in Tennant Creek who wore a uniform. And it was, well, it makes you a target. Like, yeah, I don't know if Mum quite understood. I went home every day after school and said, Mum, I don't think you understand. I need to wear ordinary clothes to school tomorrow. Please let me wear not the uniform. Mum said, no, you will wear the uniform.
ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. You're my Territory childhood guest this afternoon. It is the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory, Michael Patrick Francis Gunner, sharing with you memories of growing up in Alice Springs, in Tennant Creek, and in Darwin. And eventually, your family, Dad Mick, Mum Jane, your little sister Rebecca, little brother Tom, and little sister Lucy, you eventually move to Darwin and you attend St. John's College. And you excel at school. You're a reader, you're a debater, a chess player, even forming a Doctor Who club. Can you describe your love of Doctor Who and a little bit about the members of this club of yours?
I was just talking with Mum about this. This is good timing. And she said the very first TV show I fell in love with and watched as a young kid was Doctor Who. I don't know, 7 or 8, I'd just be glued to watching Doctor Who. And I still am now. I love the show. I don't know, there's something about it that gets under your skin. It's fantastic. So yes, I did do all that.
So you're a Whovian.
I am absolutely a Whovian. Is that a good thing to claim as Chief Minister? I don't know. But I'd be proud. I'm proud. I'm out and I'm proud. I'm a Whovian.
And when you formed this club at school, who came? What did you talk about?
I think it was only about 2 or 3 mates. We were caught up anyway, if that makes sense. But we were all massive Doctor Who fans. And back then it would have been the curly head. Dr. Colin Baker was probably my first doctor. Everyone talks about their first doctor. He was my first doctor. I was almost disappointed when he moved on and we were replaced by Peter Davison and others. But, you know, we were told crazy stories about Doctor Who. Where would we go? Where would you do? It's always the great adventure. What's the first choice? As somebody gets to go in the TARDIS, you're ever a companion, the first question really is, do you want to go to the future or do you want to go to the past? And that was always a big debating point.
And what's the answer in those formative teenage years, a 13-year-old, a 12-year-old discussing this at St. John's? Where did you go?
So growing up in Tennant and Alice, I was always fascinated by the past. And as an adult, you get to travel and you go to places where you get to see the Colosseum or you get to see the pyramids. Like, that was always fascinating, the past. And growing up, then I was thinking the past, and I was thinking the ancient ruins and all that sort of stuff that you get taught about in primary school. The question now, I'd probably love to go see the future, but back then it was all about the past.
There's also a time when Mum and Dad, Mick and Jane, they were running a news agency in Glenelg. You were about 6 years old. What comes to mind most for you of that time with the news agency?
Begging Dad for 20 cents to play the computer games. He would never lend me that 20 cents. That was for the customers. I was not allowed on the arcade games in the front of the news agency.
My understanding as well is that during this time of them running this news agency, that this is a time that sparked a love of reading for you.
Yeah, no, I'm a massive reader. Maggie Hickey, former Labor leader, though I knew her at the time as a librarian in Tennant Creek, once joked with my mum that I'd actually got extra funding for the Tennant Creek Library. My borrowing rates were so high. I just loved reading. And my granddad was a massive reader, and he didn't travel much, granddad. This is Peter Gunner, my dad's dad. But you get to travel through books. And so you get this wonderful adventure, wonderful experiences all through reading. And as a kid, I was always off to the library. The first thing I ever discovered in a new town because we moved a lot was, where's the library? And I used to go and hunt the library, and librarians used to say, you're in the wrong section, that's for the adults. I said, no, I've read all the kids' books already. I started off with the, you know, things like the Trixie Beldens and that. And I remember very happily reading them in, like, I think it was like grade two or three. And I saw these like year six girls reading the Trixie Beldon. And I thought, oh, I'm like, you know, you feel a bit proud. I'm reading those big kids are reading. Then you jump into, I was reading, you know, the James Bonds and the Lord of the Rings. I remember reading that in grade six. And so you're just exploring, you know, science fiction, murder mysteries. Mum got worried at one stage about, oh, that book I think is too old for you, son. And Granddad said, no, no, that's all okay, I approve. And got Granddad's tick, and then Mum backed off.
Moving forward into your teenage years, and sport is a huge part of your life, representing the Northern Territory in the schoolboys rugby union competition. What do you remember about being on the field and sportsmanship?
You learn a lot about going hard but fair. And you got measured on the field about whether you're willing to put your all in and knowing where the line is. And it was amazing to develop these bonds of trust with your mates, especially in union, where you go, you put your body in the line and hold it for the ball to come out the back and that. And would you get there in time? I was playing breakaway, so it was my job to always get there first and look after your mate who'd been tackled. And off it, you often made mates of the blokes on the other side and that. And it was that first real experience of just going really, really hard, but fair.
So you're a reader. You've got a Doctor Who club in high school at St. John's, and you're representing the Northern Territory schoolboys in rugby union. You come across, Michael, as quite a popular student, that you love school. What was high school like for you?
When you jump around school as much as I did, sometimes you're popular and sometimes you're no one's friend. It just changes from school to school. So I did love school. I made lots of mates at school. And St. John's was fantastic for me. And I got to hang out with lots of different groups of kids. You know, that classic cliche of high school, you know, there's the jocks or there's the nerds or whatever. It wasn't quite there at St. John's, but so I got to hang out with all the groups. I just had a little bit in common with everybody, which was fantastic. So I loved high school. I loved St. John's. Some of my earliest memories is the Botanic Gardens, which, you know, coming from Tennant and Alice, you know, the Red Centre Desert at St. John's, the school's actually in the Botanic Gardens, and it's changed a little bit now, but back then we used to walk across the gully. So you had to walk through the Botanic Gardens to go from junior side to senior side. And it was this wonderful experience growing up at high school to literally have a school in the gardens. Unfortunately, the walkway now is up a lot higher and it's brick and it's out of the Botanic Gardens. But back then we had this really old rickety walkway that swayed. It was from the old hospital, apparently, but it was this wonderful way to go to school, I reckon, growing up in the Botanic Gardens.
Another aspect and memory of being at St. John's in your high school era, there's a particular song that reminds you of growing up here in the Territory, Guns N' Roses, You Could Be Mine. Why?
The albums, Use Your Illusion 1 and Use Your Illusion 2, were the albums of year 11 and 12. They were the dominant albums. They got played by everyone every day. It was the one album, or the two albums, that everyone agreed on, that no one fought about. They said, yep, Guns N' Roses, you can play that in the rec room we had. So as students, we had a room we could go to. And so You Could Be Mine was the first song off the album, Terminator 2 soundtrack 2, I think. It was the defining albums of our years of high school.
Alrighty, for you this afternoon on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory, Guns N' Roses, You Could Be Mine.
Come on.
Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory, Guns N' Roses, You Could Be Mine, as requested by your My Territory childhood guest this afternoon, the Whovian and the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory, Michael Gunner. You've talked a lot about family and loving your cousins and mum and dad and being really close and going on lots of driving holidays. You've got three grandmothers. Slightly confusing. Can you explain that?
Well, it seemed like common sense or natural when I was growing up. It took me a while to work out that that's not normal to have three grandmothers. So on my mum's side, she went to England briefly with her parents. And while she was there, they broke up. They divorced. And Nonna, Barb Salento, my mum's mum, went and enjoyed herself in Europe. And granddad came back home to North Adelaide where he met a lovely lady called Joan. And so mum was an original Brady Bunch. You know, she was one of four. Granddad married Joan. Joan had four kids. So eight kids growing up all through North Adelaide. Apparently they ran amok. They used to go house to house pretending to be, you know, homeless and beg for money and all sorts of games. But I grew up with Joan and Nonna and Ellen on dad's and thought three grandmothers was just, well, everyone had, didn't they? And then one day talking to school, you go, oh, hang on a sec. She only have two. I've got a bonus one.
Is it also true that you had such an affinity as a teenager at St. John's that you would sometimes hang out with the teachers in the staff room and then continue to turn up to say good day after your high school years were over?
Yes, I did. I just really I made friends with the teachers and hung out. And I used to go back, did uni obviously in the Territory in Darwin at Charles Darwin. I used to drop in and say hello to Mr. Lemke and Mrs. Brisbane and all that. Love Mr. Lemke.
Why? What was it about Mr. Lemke that you remember so fondly?
Oh, he was just the top bloke. But they actually lived on our street, the Lemkes. So I got to know the whole Lemke family and got very close with them. And they treated you like an adult. So it was just fantastic catching up and almost mentoring in a way. You know, this is my experience as a uni and just talking it out. And they were very good for me as a young kid. At that stage, mum and dad moved back to Adelaide as well. So I was in Darwin on my own at university initially. So at the old hospital site, I boarded there. And then with mates and northern suburbs living with a whole new family, which was fantastic, the Adams family. Wonderful people as well. So dropping into St. John's was a bit about that connection to the past and adults who were close to me and could provide some guidance.
When you weren't hanging out with the high school teachers as a teenager, as you say, here alone in Darwin, mum and dad have gone back to South Australia. What were you doing with your friends?
So this is where I've got some sympathy now for when people talk about kids in Darwin or are they mucking up? Well, there's a big kids over there. We used to, you know, drive around town. We'd all hang around outside the cinema, go down the Dripstone cliffs. You just hang around with your mates. Like Darwin is one of those small places. Skate World. Someone should bring back Skate World. Under a bit of pressure to do that. It was a very different experience for me, suddenly being on my own in Darwin at uni, no family around. So I had one Christmas where I had breakfast with one family, lunch with another, dinner with another. The Lemkes being one of those families. And I was just really lucky that we'd made such close friends and people were happy to take me in. I was the sort of orphan in Darwin. And that was my favourite Christmas almost in many ways.
How old were you then?
17, 18.
When you graduated from St. John's, you were in the top few of your class. And during this time, you'd also been working at Big W, stacking shelves. You're 17 years old. Is this where you were exposed to the union movement, the labour movement?
First of all, I should declare Big W is a secret mafia of the public service. I think I worked with like 60 or 70 people back then. They're all through the public service now. I've got Big W connections everywhere. It was definitely my first experience of the union. So I joined as a back dot worker and we didn't get breaks. And I got nominated as the bloke amongst our group of stock runners to always go at the boss and say, I think we've earned our 15-minute break now. Can we have a 15-minute break? And he always say, no, you got to work harder. Then the union guy came in one day and said, you're actually entitled to a break. You don't have to ask. You know, after X number, I think it was 2 hours, you're allowed to take your 15 minutes. And I went up to the boss and said, because they've been working us 4, 5, 6, 7 hours straight, no breaks. And I said, you've got to give us a break. This is actually against the EBA. And having the first fight as probably a 19-year-old with the boss saying, no, we're taking it. And at that point, I got drafted as an organiser on the shop, delegate on the shop floor, then an organizer later for the union. And I realized that if someone's not prepared to say, I know the rules, you will get taken advantage of. And we were forced at times to clock off and then do work. He said, the boss would say, I'm not happy with what you've done. I think you owe me 2 hours worth of work. You're going to clock off now, and then you're going to fix that up. And so we were having some bad practices. There was a bad manager who, despite knowing the rules, took advantage of the young people who are working at Big W, wouldn't give them their breaks, and wouldn't pay them the right hours work.
So what I'm hearing is this is your first experience of being quite passionate about social justice.
I'd had fortunate experiences growing up, the public housing, the charity from churches at different times when we were doing it tough. That was my first moment of saying, I think what you're doing is wrong, and you're taking advantage of these people, and it's not right, and getting them together and standing up with them to make change. So, yes, but it's also very hard, hot work. So there is some self-interest. You want a break.
So after leaving high school, you began a law degree at Northern Territory University, which of course is now Charles Darwin University. Then you switched to a Bachelor of Arts degree. You're 19 or so. Why did you make that decision?
It's quite funny now, the irony of me being a legislator, but I hated doing law. I did 1 year of it. I won a scholarship and I was doing 1 year of it. I remember at the end of that year saying, I hate this, Mum. I hate this, Dad. I don't want to do it again. And they convinced me to do one more year of it. And at the end of the second year, I said, no, I was right after the first year. I just don't like doing law. And I've got many mates who went through and finished the degrees. We always had these arguments. You know, the law says this is what you should do. And I say, but I don't agree with the law. We should change the law. And maybe when you think about it in hindsight, now I'm a legislator and that's what we do. We get to, through debate and consultation, change the law. But I just, there was something at the heart of me that did not like doing that law degree. So I gave up the scholarship and I did the Bachelor of Arts.
I imagine you would have been probably one of the first in your family as well to actually go to university. So that would have been a big deal for your family.
I had a cousin going through at the same time, and the two of us, so she would have been technically the first. She would have been the first. She did law. Absolutely. Very rare thing. On mum's side, they were a bit university oriented. Granddad was a dentist, but on dad's side, yeah, we were road train drivers and boilermakers, everything that you could do with your hands. I was the first to go down the white collar path. I'm a bit of the black sheep.
Yeah, and any pressure there as a teenager thinking, I've got to get through this, I've got to do it?
I'll give credit to mum and dad. They were very, very supportive. I think they were more proud than pressured, if that makes sense. They were just chuffed they was doing it. They still are now, in a sense.
Yeah, I think my parents would be pretty happy if I was Chief Minister.
Yes.
On ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory, your My Territory Childhood guest this afternoon is Michael Gunner, born and bred in Alice Springs, moving around the Northern Territory. He is, of course, your Chief Minister, and sharing with you memories of growing up here in the 70s and the 1980s. Now, you completed your degree and then you moved into work as a senior government ministerial and policy advisor, eventually by 2008, standing and winning the suburban seat of Fanny Bay in Darwin. Looking back over your life from those early beginnings, moving around in Central Australia, living in that housing commission house in Tennant Creek, to graduating in the few top of your class at St John's, and now as the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory, how do you reconcile your life then to what it is now?
It's kind of surreal. I'm very stationary now in some ways. I've got a home. I don't like moving, having chopped and changed a lot as a kid. But I still feel my experience of the Territory back then is the same now. You get to make a lot of mates and you get to make a lot of friends. But what I hate about the Territories remain the same too. You say goodbye too often. So growing up, through school, through the Territory, I was part of the problem sometimes. I was the one saying goodbye. I was the one leaving. But we always seem to be saying goodbye in the Territory. Mates seem to be going all the time. And I want to be able to change that. I want to try and find a way to make the home I love a place that more people call home for longer. Stop leaving. Stay. It's a great place. I hate saying goodbye.
And just while I've got you, is it true that the biggest barramundi you've ever caught is 78 centimetres?
Yeah, I've been mocked about that a lot. I've got professional barramundi fishermen who are saying, I've got to take you out. You've got to catch a bigger barra. That's not big enough. But yeah, that is currently it. And I'm not getting enough time to go and improve the record at the moment, but I'm getting mocked a lot for the size of my barramundi. Hey, at least I've caught one.
Michael Gunner, it's been an absolute pleasure spending some time with you and walking down memory lane. Thank you so much.
Thank you.